Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Fair Data Podcast. This edition is dedicated to the memory of Sarah Jones. Sarah, who passed away in December, was a much loved and admired leader in the research data management and open science community. I'm Rory McNeil, host of the Fair Data Podcast. I'm joined today by five people who knew Sarah well and worked closely with Sarah at various stages of her career. It's fitting that two, Kevin Ashley and Joy Davidson from the DCC, are from Sarah's native UK. Two, Kara Leuben from TU Delft and Marta Teprek from NWO, the Dutch research funding agency, are from the Netherlands, Sarah's adopted second home. And the fifth, Hilary Hanahoe, leads the RDA, an organization that is global in outlook and practice. Hilary is going to set the scene with a brief biographical overview of Sarah's life and career. Then we'll move on to personal reflections from each of our guests. And the last part of the podcast will be devoted to discussing several of the many important contributions Sarah made to the theory and practice of research data management at Open Science and the development of our community. So Hilary, I'll pass over to you.
Sarah Jones was born in Blackpool, United Kingdom, in 1981. And after a first degree in German and economic history, she studied digital information management, which included work in archives. She worked at HATI, which is the Humanities Advanced Technology and Information Institute at the University of Glasgow, 15 years on various research data management and digital preservation projects and services. And for most of this time, she was part of the Digital Curation Centre, DCC, where she covered different roles, including associate director. She played a significant part in every aspect of the DCC's work, from training, consultancy, publications, online services, and a wide variety of European projects, as well as being part of its management team during a period of significant change. After leaving DCC in 2020, she worked at Géant as their European Open Science Cloud Engagement Manager, where her role was to support national research and education networks with open science. Alongside her roles at DCC and Géant, she also served as independent expert for the European Commission on expert groups for FAIR Data, the Transport Research Cloud, and the European Open Science Cloud Executive Board. She was elected twice to serve on the EOSC Association Board, and Sarah served as a member of the Research Data Alliance Technical Advisory Board from 2020, and in May 2023, she was elected to the Research Data Alliance Council, the Executive Board of the Research Data Alliance.
Thank you, Hilary. Sarah was an amazing person, and everyone has very special personal reflections. Marta, would you like to start off with some of your personal reflections?
Yeah, happy to do so, Rory. Indeed, I miss Sarah very much. You know, I had the privilege of knowing Sarah really for many, many years. She was my mentor, my role model from the very beginning when I set my first feet, you know, in the RDM world as a very inexperienced person. She was always super supportive, very welcoming, and truly encouraged me to try out, not to be worried about what might happen. You know, she provided me with lots of guidance and resources. But crucially, also, she introduced me to the RDA community and actually to all the people today on the podcast. All of you I know through to Sarah. So I'm really grateful to that. You know, she shared with me all her colleagues, her friends, her network. So I really managed to expand my connections thanks to her. But also, I think one thing that I really want to highlight, Sarah was also a fantastic leader. And I really admired her always. You know, she was always professional in every aspect of any work that she was doing. But she was also extremely committed to community values, to openness. And that has really inspired me. Maybe exactly what I mean. I really admired her courage, that she could always stand up for what she believed in, and you know, what I call out the nonsense for what it was. You know, she wouldn't accept anything. You know, in a personal space, also a personal capacity, thinking a little bit about her impact on me and other people around me, I think she also had this gift to make anyone feel like a special person. You know, she always could find the best skills, the best characteristics in any of us. So I really experienced a substantial professional growth thanks to Sarah. You know, very much of who I am today, personally and professionally, I really owe to her. So I miss her very much.
Thank you. Carl, would you like to go next?
Yes, Rory, thank you for this opportunity to talk about Sarah and for taking this initiative. I have learned to work with Sarah as of the period of the executive board, as it was called. It was an expert group of the European Commission on the European Open Science Cloud. Sarah was a member of that. She was one of the three experts in that group. And Sarah was also, from that executive board, the leader of the working group on FAIR we have created from, as Hilary already mentioned. After that, she became a member of the EOSC Association board. She was elected there, and she was re-elected recently. And in that, she was sort of heading, supervising, board liaison, we call it, in the domain of metadata and data quality for, as well, the group on FAIR metrics and data quality, as the group on semantic interoperability. And in all these tasks, over the years, in the executive board expert group and in the real board we have now for the association, Sarah basically always said yes to everything. Probably she said yes to too many things. She was so friendly and so positive thinking that she always took on board the new tasks, the new activities. We had to sort of protect her of, let's say, this openness of her, not only to work with open science, but to be open to contribute to anything. Her loyalty in offering help and contributions is definitely without any other example in the boards I have seen. A friendliness. A week before she died, we had a meeting in Madrid in Spain, and I sat on the table with her, and we had a nice conversation, laughing, talking about what we were doing and how to proceed in the whole story. I couldn't imagine that things happened a week later as they have happened. And another thing I would definitely like to mention about Sarah, she was very inclusive. She always thought about having other people involved. If we do this, be welcome, join the party. We should invite those people as well. Inclusive in inviting people, inclusive in her thinking. She was always willing to take other views on board, to take other positions on board in the things she was doing, in the things she was running, I would say. We will and are missing her already dearly in the board of the EOSC Association. And I have a hard time finding a replacement for such a very good and constructive, inclusive, friendly, loyal board member. Thank you, Roy.
Thank you, Carl. Kevin?
Thanks. I think as already come across really from what we heard so far, really strikes me about Sarah is she had this really unique blend of in-depth knowledge about all the areas we are working with in the DCC and exceptional personal skills to make effective use of that knowledge and work with other people. I'm quite lucky in the DCC that I've got lots of people who are flexible, who can get involved in a number of different things that we do. But Sarah was someone who was engaged with absolutely everything we did. Everything from the events to the projects to the training, the consultancy, the online services, the management. And that was really unusual. And not just dabbling in those areas, but really bringing ideas and insight and advice and above all enthusiasm, I think, to all of it. And that enthusiasm was infectious. She lifted everyone's spirits in what we were doing. You know, things were fun working with Sarah. She was also great, I think, at combining quite long-term thinking, you know, the idea of where does this need to be in 5 years? Where do we need to be in 5 years? How are we going to do that? With the very short-term thinking about what needs to happen this week and who is going to do it? And because it was Sarah, how can I help them do it? because that was always part of that conversation. We were doing that. One example of that, I think, draws on things both of you said, is the work, for instance, she's done. I've seen her running unconferences, both the DCC and RDA events. If you've ever tried to make one of those things happen, they are hard work. Trying to very quickly get a bunch of people to decide, what is it we want to talk about? How are we going to do it? Go away, talk about it, come back and feedback. Sarah made it seem effortless. I still wish I understood how it was that she could do that. She provided lots of really good advice to me, and I know to others, and I learned a lot from her. It was really hard to see her leave the DCC after I've been working with her for 10 years there, and it was a blow, I know, to many of the staff, but it was inevitable. I think we realized she needed a bigger stage that Jayant could offer that she'd already been gaining through her work on the EOS board. The only advantage I'd say as she moved on, it was easier to be a friend to Sarah once she was no longer working for me, and I could take that crumb of comfort from that.
Thank you, Kevin. Hilary?
Well, it's very hard to follow up on that. I mean, most of the wonderful qualities of Sarah have been expressed really well by Carol and Martha and Kevin. But I suppose I had the great honour, like them, and pleasure to have Sarah as a colleague, but also as a great friend. And she was really excellent in both capacities. From a friend, she was so thoughtful, loyal, as Carol said, really funny, very inclusive, very, and great fun. I have lots of lovely memories of trips for work and not only, where we really, had great laughs and great fun and great in-depth chats and talks as well. There was no superficiality with Sarah. There was a lot of great conversations and not a minute of silence. I suppose from a work perspective, she embodied the Research Data Alliance. She embodied what I call the community, and her passion, her energy, her enthusiasm was so infectious, really infectious. And she was a true believer in open science in Europe and across the globe, of course. And she didn't just talk the talk, as the other said, about openness, but she really walked it. She invested so much time and energy into advocating for true openness. But she was the perfect embodiment of it herself in all of her personal and professional capacities. And I think she really believed in the power of community. And she was a true believer in RDA. So we were very grateful to have her in those different roles and capacities, not just as a driving community member, but also someone who was helping us also to ensure that this wonderful community was being safeguarded and things through the Technical Advisory Board and the council. And we are proud to know that she called it her tribe. So her tribe misses her, of course.
Thank you. So, Joy, over to you to give some your own personal reflections on Sarah.
Yeah, so I do have lots of fond memories of working with Sarah. We started working together back in 2008. We were both working at the Humanities Advanced Technology and Information Institute at the University of Glasgow, which is where the DCC was a core partner since 2004. And when I first met Sarah, I was working as part of the DCC, but she came on to work on another JISC-funded project, which was called the Data Audit Framework, which later became the Data Asset Framework. So she came in and started working with the team way back then, just after finishing her master's in the University of Glasgow as well. And she was enthusiastic. Even back then, she was a great asset to the team, truly believed in everything that we were doing with relation to research data management, longer-term curation, and was, a key advocate in trying to get these points across to everybody that she met. I think a key thing that she brought to the team, even way back then, was a real kind of practical approach to doing this. I'm quite often, when I think about the kind of environment we work in, when we're talking about research data management, FAIR data, and the European Open Science Cloud, they're very complex, difficult concepts to get your head around. And quite often, the kind of The term "you can't see the wood for the trees" is something that comes to mind because people can get very overwhelmed with these concepts. There's so many things you have to think about and so many steps you can take, and it's hard to know what to do first and how to even just make that first step. And I think Sarah's real great strength was that she could help people to get past that. She could take these very complex, difficult things to get your head wrapped around and really break it down into something that didn't seem quite so daunting to people. She can make it relatable in many ways. She could get people feeling that this is not something new. You're not looking to do something completely new. You're doing a lot of this already. It's just thinking about it in a different way. So I think her real strength, even from these early days of working with us, was getting people to see that in many ways, research data management isn't extra work. It's just work that you're doing already and is maybe doing a little bit more to kind of take it forward. So she was very good at that sort of guidance and support role. And I think that came through very strongly in the later work that she did with the DCC, through the institutional engagements that we did, through the training work. She was very much a key player in the training provision that we did. And then through some of the European Commission projects that we did as well. So Foster and Foster Plus, which were both about skills and learning and trying to build capacity for research data management and FAIR data. So that really is, I think, the number one thing I would say is that she was just really good at making people want to engage with the topics. I think on the other side, her personality just shone through as well. I think it's hard to be in a room with Sarah and not feel happy. She's just quite an infectious smile and very easy to talk to. And she broke down a lot of barriers. Quite often in training and these kinds of events that we would run, you know, people can feel a little uneasy and people don't always want to be the one to say, I don't understand something. And she had that ability to let people feel at their ease and to make people feel that you're not in a judged environment. You're here. We're all part of the same community. We're all learning together and everybody has something to share. So I think that was another really great strength of hers. And she's had that really since day one when she started with it.
Well, thank you. Thanks to each of you. That was fantastic, and I think the each one of you brought out some themes which kept getting repeated, but at the same time you had your own experiences and your own insights, and that was really really very nice. I think a very nice way to think about remembering Sarah. So let's now move on and speak about. Some of you have already touched on this, but let's speak perhaps a little bit more in depth about the major substantive impact Sarah had on the development of research data management. When I asked all of you for examples of areas where Sarah made significant professional contributions, I have to say I was blown away by the volume and breadth of the responses. And just to give a flavor of some of the things that were mentioned included the following: the DCC's training and institutional support, work to support the development of the RDM community in South Africa, a large piece of work during 2020 on COVID data guidelines and also leading COVID community participation, development of the research commons concept, and promotion of community-owned and community-driven development of tools and infrastructures. We won't have time to cover all these topics today, but instead we've decided to concentrate on the following three topics where, again, Sarah clearly had a very fundamental role in not only contributing, but also leading the way. And the first is data management planning. I think, Kevin, maybe you'd be a good person to give us a perspective on how Sarah got involved in that and how it developed.
Yeah, so the DCC have been doing work on data management planning, on trying to develop guidelines for how to do it, to make researchers and others understand how it can contribute to research data that's more reusable and everything else. It started that work, I think, in around 2008. It was a couple of years before I joined. And initially, Sarah's working with others both on developing those guidelines, and we then had begun to develop an online tool to help, essentially to make it easier rather than reading a leaflet about how to do it. You could use a tool that might provide helpful advice about how you might go about doing that. Sarah took on lead responsibility for that, I guess, probably around 2011, 2012, and I would say injected, brought that energy that is so distinctive that she brings to so many things into the work, and bringing others into it as well. So initially still within the DCC, but engaging more people about everything from the technical side of how do we rethink the user interface, how do we sort of think about workflows, through the side of the guidance and through right down to the nature of our liaison with the people providing our IT infrastructure, to say that, getting involved in every aspect of it. But I think more relevantly for the type of discussion we're having now, we others around the world began to get involved in this, and Sarah was really key in essentially building a community out of that, of ensuring that we were talking to the people in the California Digital Library who were developing similar things, that we were engaged as others in Europe began to do similar work. And in a sense, the RDA came along at just the right time for us to have a home there in order to create that community and to continue conversations amongst the people doing that work. And it's characteristic of Sarah, I think, that much of what came out in those guidelines and other work was really her work. I mean, but she took very little credit for that. She was somebody, because of that, the way in which she built communities and encouraged others to join in, to contribute, she would often then step back and it would seem as if it was the work of others. But in fact, all of us involved knew how critical an involvement was to that.
Thank you, Kevin. That's really interesting. One thing I was thinking about as you were speaking, it's hard to believe that in all of the earlier comments when people were discussing the many remarkable attributes that Sarah had, one which maybe wasn't mentioned but kind of jumped into my mind when you were speaking was she did everything with a light touch. So she was incredibly knowledgeable, incredibly hands-on, technically savvy, all of those things. And yet, maybe it also relates to your point about she was not keen to take credit, more modest than she should have been. But she did all these things very kind of naturally. And even in whether it came to technical things, she managed to convey them in very, you know, ways which were understandable to people who maybe weren't as technically competent as she was. And I think that probably was an aspect of why she was so successful.
Yeah, and it's intriguing. I mean, and if you look, going back, you know, to Hillary's description of, you know, her background in education and everything else, it didn't involve technical degrees or anything else. You wouldn't have known that to work with her. She was really good at being that bridge between, let's say, our software developers and the people working on metadata standards, who've got a very technical view of the world, not always got a very user-centric view of the world, and the others involved, the policymakers and everything else, that almost translating between those groups and those communities and enabling them to have a conversation, you know, was a real skill. And one where I'm still not quite sure where all that knowledge came from that enabled her to do that.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Kevin. So the second topic is perhaps a bit broader. Data management planning, it was a kind of a specific thing, but fair data is the second area where Sarah made multiple contributions, and it is it's a broader concept. But Sarah did a lot. So I'm just going to throw this one open. Feel free, anyone, to jump in and comment on your memories and your experience with how Sarah helped to develop the concept and then the implementation of fair data.
If I may go first, Roy, indeed, it is especially the domain of fair data that my involvement with Sarah, our connection, is based on. And she has given multiple contributions to that. Let me mention one in particular, which has a lot of facets in it, the SCRIA, Strategic Research and Innovation Agenda. We started making that, building that. It's a 200-page document, unfortunately. In the time, she was an expert in the expert group of the commission called the Executive Board. She had major contributions, especially in the domain of fair data, to that SCRIA. But also, she was able to collect people to contribute to that and to make that into the next phase, a working group on FAIR, and make that again in the next phase, because the SCRIA contains in Chapter 8 what we call the multi-annual roadmap. And so she started to take the lead in the EOSC Association Board on multi-annual roadmaps, contributing and leading to create a new multi-annual roadmap. See to it that a survey was taken in Europe involving the expertise of many people, but also the opinion of many people on topics like that. So she has been an enormous driving force behind this strategic research and innovation agenda. We are still using, we're now talking about updating that for a next version next year. But the present SCRIA is still being used in order to influence the community, to influence the commission especially, the type of things. Actually, today I had a meeting that resulted in a project, comes from a project that resulted from the proposals she has put into this strategic research and innovation agenda in the multi-annual roadmap. Yeah, it is incredible, as Kevin says, where she got the ability to combine deep knowledge on technical issues now and then with, let's say, the possibility to talk to people in the European Commission, to involve the community at large and give space to the opinions, including the opinions of people that are less knowledgeable. And yes, it was not about herself. It was never about herself. She didn't do this for any gain on her side. She did this for Open Science. She did this for EOSC. She did this for Fair Data. She basically did it for the community at large, in order to improve the world. And I never, ever got the feeling that she was after getting a benefit for her organization or for herself. No, it was always about the cause, the right cause, in having, let's say, availability of knowledge for the community at large. Amazing.
Can I jump in, Carl? Because you mentioned a lot of topics around the EOSC, you know, and also the FAIR aspects. And that's also something that I recall very well. You know, Sarah, you mentioned that Sarah was the chairperson of the EOSC FAIR working group that was indeed tasked with what should we do to implement FAIR in the next level, you know. And she invited me, to my big surprise, to be part of the group. And I looked a little bit at the members. Sarah, what are you doing? You know, all the big people from national country representatives and me, you know, what do you want me to help in this group? But she thought, somehow believed that I can make a valuable contribution. Moreover, you know, then Sarah invited me to be a co-chair of a task force within that working group to look, to put, like, specifically to look into what the communities should be doing to put FAIR principles into FAIR practice. So something, as you said, very oriented, very practically oriented, what can we do to actually implement FAIR practices. And again, you know, I was horrified when she asked me, to be honest with you, because I looked at the people there, you know, and indeed some very, very technology oriented colleagues, as you have expressed very nicely, Kevin, coupled with people from the humanities, with national level policymaker. And I was like, Sarah, how do you want me to make it happen? You know, but Sarah did say, you know, just trust me, these people have various skills, you know, it will be better thanks to all these contributions. And believe me or not, that's really, you know, for her mentorship, for her trust and encouragement, that was really one of the best, most fulfilling, really tangible projects that I have been involved with in the European Open Science Cloud aspects. And Sarah, indeed, I do remember, you know, when members of our smaller group, you know, were encountered the big SCRIA document, which you have mentioned, Carol, we look at 200 pages, how are we going to contribute? And Sarah, you know, yes, you make a good contribution, please try, you know, there and there, you can really make meaningful changes. And indeed, those changes were then reflected in the final work programs issued by the Commission. So why I'm mentioning this, you know, that was just something that I really thought from the beginning it will not work. And Sarah, in it, you know, made it work and made it better and made it something that, you know, none of us, I think, would have anticipated we will have such good end results. So not only that contribution to the big strategy of the commission, but also we published, I think, a small recommendations for how to implement, put the principles into practice, which really wouldn't have happened if not Sarah.
Can I add something to that about, so this was all rightly so in the context of Europe, which is our, all of our homes, I suppose, and where most of us invest a lot of time and effort, but, you know, the international perspective. So she brought the whole FAIR concept and the European Open Science Cloud concept, like, to the table through WARDIA, okay, but in the Global Open Research Commons. And FAIR, I think, has had a more accelerated pathway in Europe, thanks also, I suppose, to our funder and things like that. But in other countries around the world, it's been a little slower than to become sort of mandatory and things. And I really do believe she had, she was instrumental also in the propagation of FAIR, like Kevin mentioned before about how, you know, she believed that the DMP, this tool, should be, you know, should be speaking to all different stakeholders. And she did the exact same thing about the European Open Science Cloud, using it as an example, but also the whole FAIR principle, and doing it all in a very simple, easy to understand way. I mean, I think once she used very different anecdotes to explain things, but once she said, this is how I explained it to my father, you know, and I thought, right, that must have been, you know, challenging, but it was really. And then the other thing she did, I think, as well, at least to instill in the realm of the sort of FAIR aspect and data and research outputs, was it, in her work in Géant, of course, which much more towards research and education networks, so slightly more, you know, cables and technology and hardware and things like that. And she brought definitely the two worlds much closer. And I think through the FAIR concept, that also helped really, really a lot there as well, to show that, you know, everything can come closer. So I think her contribution is pretty significant.
Yeah, it's actually, if I may add to that, a pity that she was not able to attend the second Lawrence conference last January, and there where we were talking about the next 10 years of FAIR. Her contribution would have been enormous, and her knowledge and experience in that domain, yeah, would have been exceptional. A pity she was not able to be there. Yeah.
Well, if you'll excuse me, I know I'm supposed to be the moderator, but if the guests and the listeners will excuse the substantive comment from me, one of the reasons that I started the FAIR Data podcast was that I felt that a lot of the conversations about FAIR data were quite siloed. So data stewards would talk to data stewards, and, you know, different people would talk to different people. And the idea was to stimulate communication between the different tribes or the different groups within the broad FAIR data church that all believed in FAIR data, but weren't necessarily talking to other kind of subsegments. And I'm listening to the description of people's reflections of Sarah, and that's exactly what she did. She brought people together. She brought concepts together, and she had such a broad reach in terms of both intellectually, but also in terms of people, that she did that in everything that she did. And I think FAIR Data is really a good example of that. But
if I may maybe comment on that, what you said, Rory, to continue. You know, you said that she indeed had this people-driven community approach to everything that she did. I fully agree with that. You know, maybe I have one personal professional story to share. You know, when I took over from my predecessor to become the director of FORTIU Research Data, we were in the middle of finalizing a procurement to procure a third-party provider to run our repository. That has just concluded as I took over the directorship of the organization, and I was tasked with making the announcement of that procurement outcomes and the next step. Well, that has been, as you might anticipate, has been met with quite a robust criticism of the entire open science community. And that, oh my God, what do I do? You know, so of course, what do I do? I call Sarah, you know, Sarah, what do I do? You know, what are the, what should we have done? You know, what can we learn from that? How do I make peace with the community? And Sarah, you know, very rightfully, I think some of you were actually, Rory, you were involved in that, you know. Sarah, let's just bring it for a community discussion. It's like, oh, that's very confidential, you know, procurement, what can we discuss? But in the end, I do remember it clearly. Sarah, I think she brought it under the that auspices of RDA. We did organize some discussions about topic which I still think, and now I'm a champion learning from Sarah, you know, what are the alternative paths that an organization can take, not only procurement, but maybe what are the other paths that really allow you to achieve more community-driven open infrastructures for the benefit of research data, of fair data, of the entire community, how to sustain them as well. So in the end, you know, from a story which perhaps was embarrassing, you know, and I wasn't really sure how to bring this up, you know, thanks to Sarah's involvement, you know, not to be embarrassed, but let's learn from it together. It really turned around and I think helped us, many of us, grow and understand and share best practices around procurement. So it's just an example.
That's a great example, Marta. I think, yeah, that both the way in which she managed to turn a, you know, in a sense, a problem into, well, identifying a problem where you can have constructive discussions about what to do about it instead of simply feeling this is terrible, we have this problem, and blaming other people for it. And I managed to generalize it a lot because that issue in general of how you can support the world of open source, open infrastructure, open standards, open ways of working with the frameworks that many of us have to work in involving procurement and exercises that are often end up excluding the types of things you want to work with. It's a big problem, not bigger in a sense even than what we've been discussing today around FAIR, but that was a great, and that approach, as you say, to turn it into a community discussion, to use RDA as a platform to do it, I think was, inspired, really, and ended up making us all enthusiastic, I think, to be involved in. It's great.
Okay, great. Well, that actually sets the scene. So we've talked about, in terms of professional contributions, we've talked about data management planning and FAIR data, and I think the last comments of Marta's and Kevin's kind of set the scene for perhaps a little bit deeper dive into the third area that we've identified for discussion today, and that's community building. Both broader community building initiatives and person-to-person community building efforts. So the floor is open.
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, Sarah, this is one of her strengths, is this kind of collaborative working method and being approachable and really able to get things done. She's a doer, not just a talker. She was somebody who could get things done and get people to take those practical first steps in what can seem like a daunting path towards becoming more FAIR enabling and a contributor to the European Open Science Cloud and other things. There were a couple of things that I think were worth noting in her professional work. And I think the first one I mentioned briefly before was the institutional engagements. This was some work that we did through the Digital Curation Center between 2011 and 2013. It was a bit of money that came through HEFCE. It was called the University's Modernization Fund. And what it did was enable us to work in a kind of one-to-one capacity with universities to help them to increase their capacity for developing and delivering research data management support services and all the things that go around it, like policies and things like that. So for the purposes of this delivery, we had people who would work with the universities in that sort of one-to-one capacity. So Sarah and other members of the team would form these strong relationships with the people that they were working with and work with them, you know, in step-by-step, just trying to help them to figure out where they were, what they might want to progress within the life of the support program, and to take those practical steps and trying to really break it down into something that they could do. And I think, you know, it was a very effective bit of work for the DCC as a whole. I think we worked with more than 20 universities over that period. A lot of them were just getting started at that point with research data management. And it's, you know, really great to see that many of them are now leaders in, I would say, in the field. They've got really great services. And I think Sarah played no small part in making these things become day-to-day practice in the UK. So, you know, she had that professional impact. I think her work with these organizations really has had a lasting impact on, you know, some of these services. But I think more importantly, I'm pretty sure every single person that she worked with as part of this institutional support program, she developed a friendship with them. And that lasted, I would say, right up until, you know, last year, even when she went away from the DCC and moved on to Géance and was working with the EOSC Association, she kept up these links with people. So, you know, once she made a bond with people, they were there for life. I think that was one of the strengths of Sarah too, is that she definitely was not one who was stingy with her time. She was always happy to take on a little bit of extra time or work just to give somebody a hand, even if it wasn't part of her daily to-do list in a job or a project kind of context. So she's managed to keep those relationships going for well over 10 years. And I think, you know, if you asked anybody in the UK about Sarah Jones, I'm sure they would all have very positive things to say, not just about how much she contributed to the field, but also that she was just a hell of a nice person and somebody that you enjoyed spending time with. There was another bit of work I think that is probably also worth mentioning. So just, that was the UK context. Sarah did do an awful lot of work globally, as I think you've probably already heard from some of the other panelists. She was very active in many different areas. One of the fondest memories I have of working with Sarah was between 2013 and 2015. And during that time, we did quite a lot of work in South Africa. So we were kind of taking a lot of the key messages that we had honed through the DCC in the UK context, and we're invited to go and start to work promoting this in South Africa. So it started off, I think, from an invitation from the Library and Information Studies Association in Africa, in South Africa, sorry, to do a webinar. And this was back in 2013. And they had organized, I think, about 100 participants from across 23 South African universities to join. And I think this was our first experience of doing a fully virtual webinar. It seems so crazy to think now that we weren't always, you know, operating through Zoom. But yeah, back then, this was the first time we'd ever really worked in this way. And, you know, I think both of us were really struck, first and foremost, by the fact that everybody who was in the room was there because they believed in research data management and data management sharing as just being something good to do. There were no national mandates driving this, just people who felt that this was a good thing. And that very much was similar to what Sarah believed. This was, you know, core to Sarah's being, and it was something that we were delighted to see was happening there as well. But I think, you know, when we came back from that event, Sarah wrote a nice blog post on the DCC website. And in it, she was very kind of questioning about why are we not using this kind of technology more often? You know, why are we not using what we have to share the knowledge and to build those collaborations, even where the physical kind of person-to-person contact can't be managed? Why can't we do it more like they're doing it in South Africa? So she was very much, you know, starting to think we should be using this technology to do the kinds of things that now are so commonplace. I think she was one of the people who started to tap into the potential there for research data management quite early. I think other things that maybe came out through that visit too, you know, I think Sarah, again, we did this roadshow type approach when we actually went out in person in 2014. And started to meet with the people in South Africa and hear what they were getting up to. And again, I think Sarah was really struck by the fact that in the absence of a national mandate or funders mandate or some real reason to do this as a sort of a stick, you know, people still were very much proactive, just getting something done. And I think that, again, was something that really resonated with Sarah, because she was not just a talker, she was a doer. She was very much of the frame of mind that you don't have to wait for something to be perfect. The conditions will never be perfect. So just take a step, just make any step and get something underway. It doesn't have to be big, it doesn't have to be perfect, but just make something happen. And I think she was great at getting people to take those steps because you need a little bit of bravery to sometimes make that step. And she was good at getting people to be feeling brave enough to take those steps. So definitely we learned a lot from those visits to South Africa, both virtually and in person. But I think the spirit that we met there very much was very similar to Sarah's spirit. So I think she found some kindred spirits out in South Africa. And I know she'll be missed. I've seen some messages coming out from colleagues over there. So I know that her legacy will live on there.
Well, for me, she is the embodiment of RDA. I don't know how to say this, but I've never been involved with RDA myself directly. I've not been a member or something like that, but not because I didn't want to. It just never happened. I had other things on my mind. But if I think about Sarah, if I met Sarah, if you would have only Sarahs in this world, the world would be perfect with respect to what RDA aims to achieve. She is really the embodiment of let's say, bringing things together in a wider sense, worldwide, very often, in order to achieve the, let's say, goals of reaching out to everybody and contributing to a better world. That aim of making this a global effort, which RDA, in my view, is trying to do, is really embodied by her as a person. Sorry, Hilary, you're much better to judge this than I am, this is the way I feel it, that way.
No, but it comes, it's lovely. Thank you for that, because it's nicer coming from you than from me. I have a vested interest in it, but it's so true, she really did incarnate, I suppose, RDA, and the guidelines or the principles on which were built. And she was great, really enthusiastic about it. As I said in the beginning, when they, read the bio, she didn't just get really involved in the community, but she stood up for extra work on the technical advisory board, which meant, assessing the groups and providing support and insight internally to the governance bodies, but also to the community itself. And then decided that, not enough, and I'll help you with your oversight and your vision. And unfortunately, we didn't have her long on the council, which is a shame, because I really believe that she would have, contributed greatly to that. It's very hard to, give other points, because she really was the epitome. But I might take this opportunity to say that, of course, we're not just RDA, but others from the community. While we're really grateful, Rory, for this podcast, we want to remember Sarah in a slightly longer term way, particularly for the contribution that she's been given to community. So with DCC and many others, we wanted to tell everyone that we will be doing something in her honour that will celebrate Sarah's contributions to the community. And one other thing I wanted to say, and there will be more information on that, of course, as soon as we have more. And as I said, we're talking with DCC and anybody else who would like to support that. One other thing that Sarah, in a community context, was very a real advocate, if not a militant, for gender diversity, equality, inclusion. And so with Martha and many other of her colleagues, female colleagues, if I may, we're going to attempt to set up a mentoring network, because many of us, Sarah provided mentorship to us and vice versa. And we think she'd have liked that, us to remember and to make sure that there is a space that she provided, she was given. She often talked about the people that mentored her and how important they were to her. So those are two things that we feel are important from a community's perspective to honor this wonderful person who gave so much. So we can continue giving on her behalf.
Yeah. Thanks very much for raising that, Hilary. And absolutely, yeah. But we'll be sharing more details with everyone. Once you get that firmed up. There's two things in talking about community building aspects of what Sarah did. I that struck me, and what you mentioned as well, Hilary, about championing of equality and diversity. So on a much, we've been talking a lot about Sarah's work on the global stage, but actually when I first joined DCC 14 years ago now, much of our work was actually being done on a smaller stage. It was a much more UK-focused organisation, even though we had global interest in what we did, and much of our money came from the UK. One of the things we were doing then was we were funded to help universities around the UK begin to establish services around dealing with research data, something that really didn't exist in most places at the time. And we had a number of ways of doing this. One of them was roadshows that Sarah was involved with other staff in doing that. We were quite struck when we went around running these events at different institutions that we would bring people together. We'd talk to them about some of these issues, about why they should be caring about research data, why they shouldn't be seeing it as a cost but actually an investment. All the messages we like to give about why people should invest time and effort and money into getting this right. And we were quite struck, but often that effectively we were creating small communities, conversations out of this, that we would work hard to invite people from different parts of the organization, from policy, from people running particular research groups, people in the library, people in IT, talking about these things, and realizing then that actually they'd never been in the same room together, even though they worked in the same organization. And it was Sarah and those who really provided, in a sense, that is in a small scale, this environment for people who ought to talk to each other and actually wanted to talk to each other, and giving them that opportunity to do that. And another reminiscence, really, you mentioned Sarah, along with the DCC, we felt some years ago that we needed to do something about increasing, doing what we could to particularly make sure we had better gender equality at the events we were running. We'd always worked hard to make sure we got female keynote speakers, but we realized there was more we could do. And one particular action was based on reading some research around the effect of having chairs that were women against men. And as a result, Sarah led an effort to make sure that at one event, every single session was chaired by a woman without making a lot of noise about it, but just, we'll do it. You know, we'll see if anyone notices, complaints, or whatever. But one of the other effects that had was that we had to, whereas in the past, I think we've been pretty lazy, and you pick the people as session chairs or the people you know, the people who are big noises in the field and whatever. And for them, it's a burden. You ask them to chair a session. Yeah, all right, I'll do it if you really want me to. But now we are reaching out to a new group of people for whom this wasn't a burden. This was an opportunity. The way you were talking earlier, Marsh, about, oh, thanks so much, are you sure I can do this? And we're saying, yeah, we're sure you can do it. Sarah did lots of work with those people as individuals, writing them guidance, giving them support, telling them, okay, you've never done this before, but this is how you do it. It's really easy. Don't worry, we'll back you up. And we know that's made a lot of difference to people since then who felt, yeah, they having done it once, like any of these things, you can feel confident, you can do it again. And before you know it, you're running your own events and doing that thing. And Sarah was key to making that happen.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I think that's probably an appropriate time for us to wind up the discussion. Let me just offer sincere thanks to all five of you for agreeing to participate in this memorial discussion and for your contributions this afternoon. I hope our conversation today has helped to shed light on the remarkable person that Sarah was, and has also highlighted in a lasting way some of her fundamental contributions to the development of research data management and open science. The Fair Data Podcast is provided by fairdatapodcast.org and produced by Mehroz Ahmed. You can listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Thank you, and see you next time.